I'm Michael Goldfarb, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. If you're a fan of great guitar players, you know who this is. The slinky sound infused with Celtic and Middle Eastern sensibilities, the smoky baritone voice, and then the lyrics, redolent with despair and longing, tales exploring the darker corners of human existence.
Among the headstones, your politest boys, crepes and tombs like a room full of toys, just up the river from the smoke and the noise, Gethsemane. And there's war whoops and secret signs in the trees. Estuary smiles coming up on the breeze. Oh, perfect, endless days like these. Oh, Gethsemane. Ah, Gethsemane. Sailboats on the cape, push back on the quay. In your eyes there's fire, in your hand destiny. Oh, be something, fine, fine.
Well, you know if you know him. It could only be our guest in this hour, Richard Thompson. For more than 35 years, Thompson's stock and trade has been the murder ballad, ditties of relationships shot to hell, and celebrations of other scallywags and scoundrels. And you can chalk that up to his Scottish ancestry. His newest album, Old Kit Bag, is classic Richard Thompson. Songs of heartache, social commentary, and redemption, and fabulous fretwork. As usual, critics are tripping over each other to heap praise on the new disc. In a league beyond mere virtuosity, enthused the Boston Phoenix. Connection listeners, if you're already a fan of his music, what does Richard Thompson's status as cult hero rather than mega pop star say about the music industry to you? And what does it say about the artist? And if you don't know his music, what influences do you hear as you listen? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And it is a great pleasure, because joining me in the studio right now is Richard Thompson. And he's unpacked his old kit bag, which today only has his guitar. Hello, Richard.
And a spare pair of socks.
And travel prepared, I always say.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, you were sitting there and you were... I apologize, because it can be hard to hear that kind of intro being read while you're actually sitting there. Was it okay?
It's kind of cringe-worthy, you know.
I'm so,
well,
sorry.
If you're British, you know, then you're embarrassed by life generally, and especially by praise, so... Excuse me if I go red.
And listeners, Richard Thompson, underneath his trademark black beret, is actually blushing slightly.
Yes.
The song that we were just listening to, Gethsemane, seemed to sum up a lot of what people think of when they hear your music, they know your music. It's a new song, Gethsemane, autobiographical. Playing amongst tombstones and crypts.
Oh, it's not autobiographical, no. It's about someone I know. It's the story of their life, really. And if you can have the story of someone's life in 2.5 verses, it's always a challenge. It's about, I think, boys growing up. The person in the song has a very idyllic childhood. And as they become adults and responsibilities heaped on their shoulders, and nothing quite lives up to the freedom that they had as kids, and life becomes disappointing. I think it's a kind of boy's problem more than anybody else's, you know.
Yeah. But when did you, as a boy, find your way to music, and was that...
Oh, fairly early on, yeah. I started playing when I was about 10, and... Mm-hmm. I suppose it was an escape. It was an escape from the suburbs. It was an escape from...
Which suburb?
North London.
Which North London?
kind of area around sort of around Highgate. Kind of Samuel Taylor Coleridge country.
Yeah, in 1810, yeah. But today, an endless sea of brick and roads.
Yeah, you know, it goes on a bit. So it's kind of a dull place. It's like a desert, really. And... you know, I didn't really love family life either, so, you know, music was a real escape, and, school was a bit of a problem, too.
And when you picked up the guitar, was that the first instrument you picked up?
It was, yeah. There was just a guitar in the house. So my father was a sort of a bad guitar player. Sorry, Dad.
Yeah, and when you picked it up, I mean, did you have a moment? And you say, this is me, and I know it, and I can talk through this?
I don't think so, no. It was just a fun thing to do. It was an enjoyable experience, and, you know, I found some like-minded individuals, and we formed into little groups, and we kind of play, you know, the music of the day, and it was just great fun. I think it was a surprise to realize I was a professional musician, you know, at some point. I really just slid into it.
It was a segue that you didn't even notice?
Not really. I was playing at school, and then, you know, I thought, well, I'll just I'll do this until I go to university or whatever I'm going to do. And, you know, I just kept playing, and I kept kind of looking over my shoulder, and I've been doing it for 5 years and 10 years. I'm still looking over my shoulder.
As well you should be, so the listeners understand. I'm facing Richard in the studio, and behind him is half a dozen people on the other side of triple-thickness glass, so that's why he's looking over his shoulder, because he's wondering what finger signals they're giving me. Like, is it, and it's a good thing. I'm not sure what finger signals they're giving me either.
Yes, as long as it's not that Sicilian one, we're okay.
No. So far, no Sicilian signals. Right. But when you first started playing, was it mostly folk stuff, or did you like getting into thrashing around rock style stuff?
Well, we really played everything. It was just that kind of time and place. Growing up in London, it was very easy to hear many different styles of music, folk music, jazz, rock music. You know, we used to play and go to folk clubs. We used to play and go to rock clubs. You know, where we'd go to Ronnie Scott's club and hear, you know, Albert Isla or Coleman Hawkins or whatever, you know. And we listen to classical music. So there was a huge range of stuff.
Right, right. On the new CD, which and we'll talk a bit more later about, this is for a new label and it's an indie label and so on. It seems a real fair selection of the musical styles that you work in and the kind of lyrics that you write. And I've always been struck by your absolutely unique style, which seems to, I don't even know what the right words are to describe it. You get an arpeggio thing going and then some chop. And it does mix the Celtic in. Mm. And then you throw in lyrics of a contemporary significance on top of it. Did you set out to establish a style that was going to be uniquely your signature, or is it just sort of the way you played?
I think I chose to be different at a certain point, at several different points, in fact. I suppose I should have been a blues guitar player, but being, you know, a suburban white and from England, you know, then, you know, I could have been one of those, but I really wanted to be different as a musician. So, you know, various choices. And at a certain point in Fairport Convention, which was the band I was in the 60s, we said, well, you know, let's stop imitating American styles. Let's find our own voice, and let's take the music of Britain and give it a bit of a kick, mm-hmm. and give it some contemporary relevance, and let's make it something that means something to us and means something to the people of England.
Right.
And that was a big watershed for us.
Yeah, did you do much research at that point, or did you already have, you know, inside your brain the sounds that, you know, of ballads?
Well, to some extent, I grew up with, you know, the Scottish ballads. You know, it was on the bookshelves. You know, we used to have Scottish music at home. At that point, we seriously went back to the libraries and went back to, you know, the living revivalists and singers, and to rediscover all that stuff.
Could you give us an example of how you, going all that way back to Fairport Convention, how you built that sound? I mean, is there something you can play that, you know, starts being the building block of your sound?
I don't know, really. Hard to say. No.
Okay. Well,
give me four hours more notice, and I can.
Okay. This is the joy and despair of live radio. But okay,
I could play something off this record.
You've got this wonderful ballad called "A Love You Can't Survive," which cuts across all those lines. Could you hear that?
Yeah, this is very much, you know, in the Rooty style, if you like. Now I remember the promise I gave you the night I shipped out as a peace volunteer. As we sat holding hands in the Lemon Flag Tavern, I swore I'd be back for you sometime next year. But I killed a man in a Brazzaville street fight. I tried to hold back, but he taunted me so. 5 years till they freed me from that Brazzaville prison. Out of boredom or pity, I never will know. Could I bear the stain, the scar on my name? I never can go back again. Sailed my boat into New Orleans Harbor, tied up at the jetty, as bold as you please, with a half ton of Charlie built into the bulkhead, right under the noses of all them police. And now here I sit in my house on the mountain. I'm king of the clouds and all I survey. There's women who are willing and the law can't touch me, but yours is the one face that won't go away. But I can bear the stain, the scar on my name. I never can go back again. And there's a love you can't survive. There's a love you can't survive.
Richard Thompson, A Love You Can't Survive, from The Old Kit Bag, his new record. More of our conversation after the break. This is The Connection. I'm Michael Goldfarb. Richard Thompson. The tune is B-Swing from the 1994 album Mirror Blue. And Richard Thompson is with me live in the studio. This is The Connection. Richard Thompson on The Connection. And 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK is the number to call if you want to talk with Richard Thompson, ask him a bit about his influences, ask him about why he changed record companies. It might be an interesting thing to find out.
When I came to town, they called it the summer of love. They were burning babies, burning flags, the hawks against the doves.
I took a job in the steamy down on Cardroom Street. I fell in love with a laundry girl who was working next to me. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing. So fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, well, she was running wild. She said, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. And you wouldn't want me any other way. Brown hair zigzag around her face, a look of half surprise. Like a fox caught in the headlights, there was animal in her eyes. She said, young man, oh, can't you see? I'm not the factory kind. If you don't take me out of here, I'll surely lose my mind. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing. So fine that I might crush her where she lay. She was a lost child, well, she was running wild. She said, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay, and you wouldn't want me any other way. We pick fruit down in cans, and we could tinker lamps and pots and knives wherever we were. And I said that we might settle down, get a few acres dug, fire burning in the hearth and babies on the rug. She said, oh man, you foolish man, it surely sounds like hell. You might be lord of half the world, you'll not own me as well. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing. So fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, oh, she was running wild. She said, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. You wouldn't want me any other way. We was camping down the Gower one time, the work was pretty good. She thought we shouldn't wait for the frost, and I thought maybe we should. We was drinking more in those days, and tempers reached a pitch. And like a fool, I let her run with the rambling. Oh, the last I heard, she's sleeping rough, back on the Derby beat, white horse in her back pocket, and a wolf found her to feed. And they say she even married once a man named Romany Brown, but even a gypsy caravan was too hard settling down. And they say her flower is faded now, hard weather and hard booze, but maybe that's just in the price you pay for the chains you refuse. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, but I miss her more than ever words could say. If I could just taste all of her wildness now, if I could hold her in my arms today, well, I wouldn't want her any other way.
That's Bee's Wing from the 1994 album Mirror Blue. Richard Thompson playing with me in the studio. Richard, the opening line, which is about, is the summer of love, and then the song continues, and the music, it could have been a song about, written in the late 18th century, somebody leaving Great Yarmouth and heading around the world on some impossible journey and memorizing it. Intentional, presumably.
Well, I suppose so, yeah. I suppose that the song is very much about the cities. It's about people leaving cities and going off with ideals about community living, communal living, getting their heads together in the country, which was the popular phrase at the time. But it's also it's based on rural life, rural traditions that go back a long way. When I used to live in the country, when I used to live in Suffolk in England, we used to have an old tramp used to come around about every 6 months, and we'd have him stay for a few days and do a bit of gardening for us. He was a very sweet old boy, and he just had incredible stories about his life on the road. It was just extraordinary. I mean, there was about 15 novels inside this guy. From the age of about 12, he'd been really moving around, doing every conceivable job. And so there's a bit of him in this song as well. He was a great old guy.
When you say live in the country, was that in the 60s or when you were yourself a boy?
Oh, that was probably 70s.
70s.
Yeah.
And do you ever sometimes think that you actually saw the end of a certain, the very end, the very tail end of a certain kind of rural life, certain kind of English life that doesn't exist anymore?
Well, yes, but I think in some ways I'd already missed it anyway. I think the First World War, it was a big watershed in the UK. You know, a lot of things weren't the same after the First World War, and then a lot of things weren't the same after the Second World War. A lot of rural life changed dramatically. So there's only really pockets that remained of tradition. The northeast of Scotland is a famous area because it's quite isolated for farming and fishing traditions that really still continue today. And it's about the only place in the UK that has intact traditions. Other places, it's really had to be revived.
Mm. In writing your songs, you were saying in the first segment that Back in the Fairport Convention days, that it was a conscious attempt to use rock music, but to put it in an unmistakably British context rather than perhaps the other way around, of reinterpreting American rhythm and blues.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you presumably continue to do that in writing your songs now.
Well, I do, yeah. I'm still trying to bridge that gap, I suppose. I don't see it as a gap anymore, but I'm really trying to create a music that wasn't really there before. And it's just the music that I want to hear. You know, I want to hear something that between rock music and the British traditions, you know. Mm-hmm. Without sounding hokey.
Do you spend much time... you don't sound hokey. Do you spend much time going, Cecil Sharphouse, Cecil Sharphouse in London, and going through old ballads and kind of looking at the way things were written?
Well, absolutely, yeah. I wouldn't say I do it regularly. I probably go about once a year just to check on stuff that I've been thinking about, to just look for different versions of songs that might be well known, but you can find more obscure verses and better verses, and just to look at the language of songs, how they're constructed. I've been doing that forever,
And in the intro we're talking about the darkness, which is balanced by the lightness and just the beauty of the guitar. But in those old ballads, they weren't happy songs either. But they were entertainments.
Well, I suppose so. I might get flack for being, considered, I'm considered dark or gloomy. But, to me it's just normal because I grew up listening to all that stuff, Right. Murder, incest, there's extraordinarily dark songs, people being carried off by the fairies and people being murdered by, the baby being murdered by the nurse and this kind of stuff. It's just
ordinary tales of everyday folk. Yeah.
To me this is just normal, happy music, so... I think if people come from a pop sensibility, then they would see that as rather serious.
You've never covered "Smiling Happy People" by REM, have you?
I'm not sure that's a smiling happy song.
I'm not sure it is either. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Peter is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hello, Peter.
Hello. I just wanted to send greetings to Richard.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
I've been a guitar player for a long time myself, and your playing is brilliant. Thank you.
Well, some days.
Well,
you're only as good as your last note.
I too have. I had a penchant for those kind of dismal child ballads when I was learning guitar, rather than like Michael Rowe, The Boat Ashore.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you learn guitar when you were a moody adolescent, Peter?
Oh, I was pretty happy still, I think. I can't really remember. I was trying pretty hard to, like, figure out what everybody else was thinking and feeling.
Yeah, but I think people like, you know, they like those serious subjects to come up in songs. You know, I mean,
yeah.
we all love the Everly Brothers, you know, which is basically very sad music. The Louvin Brothers, you know, extremely sad music. But it's very beautiful, and I'm very attracted to that kind of music.
Well, it also, the more complex songs, I felt like it was like a short novel or something, a real story and not just kind of a fluffy moment. I also wanted to tell you how surprised I was a couple of times hearing songs of yours and that I didn't know you wrote. Once happened on the street listening to a friend, Mary Lou Lord, play in Harvard Square.
Oh, I know her.
Yeah?
Yeah, she's great.
She's obviously a fan.
Well, and, likewise.
Yeah, all great. I could sit there and listen to her for hours. She played Vincent 53, is it?
Well, that's the updated version. It was originally 52, but...
52, okay. Yeah.
Perhaps she's added a verse.
Well, I got it mixed up. So I had to know by the end who wrote that song. And, of course, you know, and she said, your name. I said, well, who else could have? It just happened again on the radio. I didn't know that you wrote Bee's Wing.
Peter, is it the song in its entirety, or is it, I mean, what do you like most about Richard's music? The songs in their entirety, music and lyrics first, or the playing which?
Well, I really appreciate the guitar playing, because I do finger style, and Richard does stuff that I can only imagine being able to play. So there's the sound of it, there's the sound, but there's the story, and there's also the kind of resonance of your voice. You really sound like a storyteller, and time and again I'm taken in. It's not just a song that I listen to, it's a song that I'm like must attend.
Oh, that's good. Well, I'm glad you're saying these things. I mean, thank you very much. But, you know, I would say it's kind of the idea, in a sense, you know, it is to communicate in that way. The way I think music's always been communicated, you know, there is a kind of a style to getting a story across. You know, and I think every song is a story song in a sense. A very simplistic it's a song by the Beatles, it's still telling a story. In a popular music way. Just that sometimes the ballads go a little deeper and in a little more detail.
Give us a story.
A story,
yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, Sir Patrick Spens, you know, the king sits in Dunfermline town, you know, drinking of the blood red wine. And here's Sir Patrick Spens, this 1600s real Scottish nobleman. Who gets betrayed and gets sent off in the sea voyage that they know is going to be a disaster. You know, his enemies kind of conspire against him. And this is told in incredible brevity in a ballad of, you know, possibly 6, 7, 8 verses. But it's very beautifully done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Beatles sing a song like, you know, P.S. I Love You, which is still telling a story. You know, it's the same thing. There's just a bit less meat to it, but it's still a story.
Okay. Don't Tempt Me.
Hmm.
It's from it's a song you did about 15 years ago. Now, what's the backstory to that song?
it's merely a jealousy song. You see somebody dancing with your girlfriend or something. You know,
you're not the jealous type, are you?
Try me. it's a kind of amusing song. It's a kind of a rap song, actually. It's extremely white rap. Mm-hmm. It's about as white as it gets, really.
yes, dead. And I'm gonna tap dance on his head. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. Don't tell me I'm halfway out of my seat. He's got the looks, he's got the life. Driving me clean off my trolley. Doing the Judah buck, doing the jive. Doing the shimmy, snakes alive. That's not a dance, that's a CX. Find that couple, certificate X. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. Don't tell me I'm halfway out of my seat.
Don't Tempt Me by Richard Thompson from the 1988 album Amnesia. A more heavily produced sound than the one we've been hearing for most of this hour. We talk about the change, Richard, after the break. Connection listeners, Richard Thompson is my guest this hour, and we'd like to hear your thoughts on darkness and music, where you find beauty in the shadowy corners of your life and the human soul. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Michael Goldfarb, and this is The Connection from NPR.
Don't tell me.
I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection, and my guest this hour with me in the studio is Richard Thompson, songwriter, guitarist extraordinaire. Connection listeners, if you want to talk to Richard Thompson, ask him a question. The number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be getting to calls in just a minute. But just before the break, we were listening to a song from the album Amnesia, 1988, and Richard, you were sitting here with your eyes scrunched, and you were listening. What, you hadn't heard that song in a long time, I take it.
Well, I don't play my own records. It's far too boring. I haven't heard it for a long time.
And what did you hear in the mix? It was different than what we'd been hearing previously in the hour.
Yeah, it's a bit more of an 80s kind of production, you know. Uh-huh. You know, lots of everything.
You're not there anymore.
I'm not there. No, I'm not in the 80s anymore.
No, you're not in that kind of
Some
studio,
say
well.
I am. Some say I'm in the 50s, but there you go. So that, you know, production values change, and sometimes you do have to follow the dictates of fashion. Record companies will kind of tweak you slightly because they want to get you on the radio or something. You know, that great elusive commercial radio thing.
So you tried that for a while. I mean, have you sort of given up on that great elusive thing? You just make your own stuff now. Old kit bags. It does sound a bit of a return to roots.
Well, I suppose I probably prefer naturalistic production, left to my own devices, and these days I am left to my own devices, so why not, you know? And it's also what listeners seem to like as well, right.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Andrea is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hi, Richard.
Hello, Andrea. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I wanted to say, first of all, how much I'm enjoying the new CD, which I think is brilliant, and I particularly enjoy the synergy that you have with Judith Owen, who I had never heard of before, but I intend to find out more about. She's just wonderful.
Oh, good. Yeah, I think she has a website, if you're a web-type person.
Judith Owen is the backing singer on the record.
Right.
Yeah, and she has her own world, her own life.
I just wanted to say you are well-known for your sort of sad, fragile, delicate songs like Beeswing, but I also really appreciate your lighthearted side and a song like Bone Through Her Nose or My Daddy is a Mummy. You know, you can just be very, very funny and lively, which I enjoy just as much.
Well, good, yeah. I suppose, I like to think that I mix a few jokes into the darker songs as well. You know, that there isn't so much of a line, you know, that I'm not Mr. Happy / Sad, you know. I'm also Mr. In-Between sometimes. And don't mess with Mr. In-Between, by the way.
Well, you remind me a bit of Dickens as a writer, because you are able be dark and heavy, but then you can invent a wonderful comic character. And also in the way that you seem to have sympathy for characters like God Loves a Drunk, for characters who only are hurting themselves, but you can reserve quite a lot of anger for characters who are hurting other people. So your sympathy is sort of well placed, I think.
Well, thank you. I love to be in the same sentence as Dickens. That's fantastic. I'd say I'm quite influenced by Charles Dickens. I've read all his stuff about 8 times, and I think he's
wonderful. Yeah, me too. Yeah. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call. If you put all the songs together, then you have almost a novel, but not quite.
Not quite, yes. A short novel.
A short novel, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Ellen is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hi, I'm going to build a little bit on what Andrea just said, because I'm actually a novelist, and what I admire so much, Richard Thompson, in addition to your music, is the way that you essentially write little short stories with just about all of your songs. I would say Robert Browning, even, that they're these little monologues by people that reveal a lot more about them than the characters necessarily intend, and you know how to do that.
Well, thank you for saying so. Interesting you should mention Robert Browning, because although I don't like him as a poet, I'd say I absolutely use his method.
Yeah.
Which is really, to get a little story into a poem or into a song, and there's a kind of way of doing that, and I think Browning was probably the first person to do that work, wasn't he? I think he was.
When you say there's a kind of way of doing it, what?
I suppose you could say that Browning almost had a cinematic technique in that he went, he wrote a lot in the first person, and he'd set the scene through the eyes of the protagonist, and you jump right into the middle of the story, which I think in a song you have to do, because you don't really have time, usually. For the pre-roll, and the postscript. So it's a useful technique.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Carl is calling from Greenville, North Carolina.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Carl.
Let's see. I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you.
I started listening to you back when I quit college back in 1973 to take my dream job selling concert tickets at a record store. And I ran across Fairport Convention and the Straubs and Matty Pryor and really fell in love with your music.
Well, thank you, Carl. Great.
I've been listening, over the years, and one thing I've noticed is that a lot of performers that have been around for a long time, there's a number of them that seem to have really hit their stride in recent years. I'm thinking of guys like John Hyatt, Tom Waits, Emmy Lou Harris, and you.
Yeah.
The last several recordings have just been sensational.
Good
I really
man.
Liked
you.
You, Me, Us, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I was one that really liked it.
You're one of the four people who bought a copy. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking of The Woods of Darnay. I've listened to that song probably a couple dozen times, and I still can't listen to it without getting choked up.
Okay. Carl, you mentioned those names. Do you think that people who work in a certain style of music have a greater scope for maturation as artists, opposed to people who might hit the stage heading for stadium rock and then can't get out of the trap?
If you're asking me, I think it's a matter of attitude. And I think rock and roll started out as young people's music, teenage music, slowly, the artists in it became more mature. But I think sometimes there's still the mindset that you're going to burn out at 23, or you have to burn out at 23, or you have to die at 28. This kind of idea that you can't be a mature artist in popular music. So I think if you get rid of that attitude, there's no reason why you shouldn't be as creative, more creative, as you hit your 40s, 50s, whatever.
Did you have a moment back in the 60s when success first came where you said to yourself, I have to pace myself?
Certainly not, no.
No.
I think when you're 18, 19 years old, you're thinking of the next 3 weeks.
Right. When you were 25 or 30 and you realized that it was going to go on and on.
Well, I think at 25 or 30, I really saw myself more as a folk musician than a pop musician. And in the folk world, you were allowed to be mature. you know, there were role models like, you know, like Alex Campbell or someone who was, you know, 65 and still singing great. So you think, you know, Daryl Adams or somebody. You look at these people and you think, well, that's great that these guys are improving as they get older. So why shouldn't I take a longer view? I mean, I still never saw it as a world of job security, and I still don't.
You still don't, but you should feel secure. They'll always, I can see, and you can't, that the huge line of people who want to call up and tell you how much they love you. So you should feel secure. I'd like to come back to the new album, The Old Kit Bag, and ask you about one particular song, which has some fairly dramatic lyrics to get us in and started. It's called Outside of the Inside.
Yeah. Well, I wrote this fairly close to the events of 9/11, and I'm not a big fan of religious fundamentalism, whoever it is. I suppose this is a Taliban's eye view of Western civilization, you know, heavily condensed. And it's a kind of, you know, I suppose it's a satire on religious fundamentalism. Really.
Let's hear a few minutes of this song, Outside of the Inside, from The Old Kit Bag.
Listen to Charlie Parker. Charlie Parker lived in vain. Blasphemer, womanizer, let a needle numb his brain. Wash away his monkey music. Damn his demons, damn his pain. What's the point of Albert Einstein? What do we need physics for? Heresy's his inspiration, corrupt and rotten to the core. Curses devious mathematics, curses deadly atom war. There's a message on the wind, calling me to glory somewhere. There are signs too deep for the dawn, like perfume in the air. And when I get to heaven, I won't realize that I'm
a little anger in that song. Outside on the Inside, it's a full listing. The lyric is really pretty intense of the people to it that we admire almost universally in Western culture, but are under attack from certain parts of Islamic culture.
Yeah, well, you know, from a very fundamental point of view, it's a kind of a medieval mindset. You know, the last 500 years don't mean very much. You know, progress doesn't mean very much. Or so they say, you know.
Well, we're coming to the end of the hour, Richard, and we want to stay with music from the album. And the last song combines two song titles, Happy Days and Auld Lang Syne. So how did that one come up?
I don't know. It's just a story. I think sometimes you start writing a story just for fun, and you don't know where it's going. And So there it is. I mean, I don't really understand the process. So.
You don't understand the process. And so it's always always fun to do these interviews live then, when people ask you about process.
It depends on the song. Some songs I can say, well, you know, I really intended to sit down and write this or write that. You know, this is about this, this is about that. Mm-hmm. This is a story, you know, it's a fictional story.
Does it come with, when you start writing, is there a melody already there, or do you work lyrics? Do you work a riff? I mean, how does that...
I think it happens all different ways. I think you need lots of avenues to get into a song. Sometimes if they start with words, if they start with music, if they start with, you know, the telephone directory or whatever, you know, it doesn't really matter, just as long as you get started. That's the main thing.
Okay. Thank you very much, Richard Thompson. Happy Days, and...
Okay, yep.
Okay, Happy Days and Auld Lang Syne.
Well, she said... Well, he said, dear, I'm leaving. Right there in the hallway, as the party rode on all around. And her head wouldn't turn. Oh, she couldn't look at him. In a whirlpool, she quietly drowned. She said to herself, I won't cry, I won't grieve, but I'll laugh and I'll flow with the wine. With the fast love of strangers, we'll sing sweet by and by. Happy days and Auld Lang Syne. How I wish I those old songs they're singing, such comfort they're bringing to a heart that's as empty as mine. With lips in you so high, 'cause the sweet by and by, happy days and Auld Lang Syne. She said, I'll be wearing my smile like a mask, and I'll smile like a stranger that I kiss. No one will know that I'm wounded and cheated.
Richard Thompson, thank you very much. I'm Michael Goldfarb in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.